stupid set. Wow, look at this.
Yeah.
They watched 9 shorts. Woo!
I think we, I feel like, is okay. This on? Are we?
Yeah, do you want to just start?
Okay, we'll start.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi. So this is going to be a special episode. It might be a little shorter, depending on how much we find out we have to say. But last night, Jason and I went to, I thought it was Riff Tracks, but it turns out it was just Riffapalooza. It wasn't an official Riff Tracks event.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was?
I think it was branded Riff Tracks, but it was, you know, like Mike wasn't there.
Right.
I don't know why Mike wasn't there.
Well, it was for the SF Sketchfest.
Yeah.
So that was like the overarching thing. And the two people that do SF Sketchfest were part of the show.
Yeah.
Janet Varney, and I can't remember the other dude's name.
Yeah, the founder guy.
Yeah. And then the usual suspects, Trace Beaulieu, Frank Conniff.
Yeah.
Kevin Murphy and Bill Corbett, but then also, weirdly but awesomely, John Hodgman.
Yeah, right.
Was there.
Right.
Which is very random.
A great collection of people.
Jason and I were outside after the event ended, and they literally just walked out one of the side doors and like got an Uber, and they were carrying their leftover Chinese food. And it was very interesting because it was like they were just normal people. I mean, which of course they are normal people, but
yeah. I think they're just under the celebrity radar that they can just kind of walk around. And of course, I'm sure they get stopped by people, but like, I just don't think it's intense enough that they need to like escape out the back way or hide in a limo or something like that.
That makes sense to me for Frank, Trace, Kevin, and Bill. I was a little surprised that John Hodgman was just kind of like slumming with them. he seems like he's one step up.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just because I know him.
Yeah.
Maybe he's really not that famous. I don't know. What has he been in recently? Anything important or good?
Super recently, I don't know. No, I know John Hodgman from things that he did like 10 years ago.
Yeah, we did the PC and Mac commercials. Mm-hmm. People don't know who he is, but they do know that face.
Yeah.
And he wrote those books I like, which I can't think of the name of.
He was on The Daily Show for a while, a long time ago. The first version with the first Jon Stewart era.
Yeah,
he would come on and he would play like a rich billionaire, I think, or something. And he would talk to John. He would talk down to John about like how rich people think about politics and stuff.
He does a article for the New York Times called Judge John Hodgman, where people can write in with things like,
about that.
My husband likes to do this thing. Is that, I think that's gross. Is it really gross? And he'll like pretend to be the judge and issue a proclamation.
He also hosted he also sort of comedy hosted and bookended a documentary about They Might Be Giants that came out straight to DVD.
Yeah.
That I watched a number of years ago.
Okay.
So he's one of these people that I think just gets around a lot and doesn't have a career that you can easily kind of pin down. And then of course, riffing with these guys only further muddies the waters. Like, what is this guy? You know,
yeah.
Kind of jack of all trades in the comedy genre.
Well, and I got the distinct impression just watching them interact with each other after the show that they were going to like go have dinner and hang out.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably even with those Sketchfest founders.
Yeah.
I think that there's a, you know, like I'm in the music, the local music scene. And I think comedy is very much like local music where there's just like a tight network of people that all kind of know each other and have each other's phone numbers. And so I think sometimes you were asking like, why is John Hodgman here? And I think sometimes it is really as simple as just somebody who kind of knows him already. Maybe it's Bill Corbett, maybe it's Varney, you know, just calls him and says, hey, or texts him and says, do you want to come on Thursday night?
Right. You're going to be here anyway. Do you want to come riff?
Do you
some
have
things?
Plans?
So onto the riffing. Big picture, it was awesome and hilarious. I would say it was about, or would you say an hour and a half?
Yeah. Hour and a half, 2 hours.
And they did roughly 9. We think they did 9. We're not sure. We can't remember all of them, but we remember 9 of the shorts.
Right, yeah.
I feel bad because I have the vague sense impression that it was really awesome and funny, and I had a really great time, but I also don't remember any of the riffs.
Oh, yeah.
Do you?
I mean, I might remember as we go, but I think, I mean, there were just so many, and I think what we need to establish here, and this might frame up the conversation, they were, I didn't actually know this till I showed up, and then I retroactively looked it up, and I was like, oh, yeah, it lists that in the event. They were improv-ing. They were not, this was not scripted riffing like other Riff Tracks events.
I did wonder about that, and it was one of the conclusions I came away from it, and I guess this is not surprising, but it was interesting to see it happen in real time.
Yeah.
They were all funny. None of them were bad.
Yeah.
But there is an obvious hierarchy of talent at improv riffing to movies.
Yeah.
That there was a clear, I would divide them into three tiers.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
there
that's
was
interesting.
Kevin and Bill.
Yeah, they're great.
They're just
so sharp.
They're really funny, but they're also very, what's the word? Professional? Is that the right word?
Well, they have a lot of energy, for one thing.
They have a lot of energy.
They're more energetic than most of them.
They're very skilled. Like, mm-hmm. on a technical level, they're skilled at riffing movies.
Yeah, yeah.
They know things like when to start and stop speaking.
Yeah.
When to time a joke relative to what happened in the movie.
Do you think some of that is just the sheer volume of riff tracks that they've done?
I think it's one of those skills that comes with practice.
Yeah.
I do think they're inherently good at it. I think they've always been good at it, even back in the beginning.
Yeah.
But now there's just a clear, it's like when you watch somebody do anything that they're really good at, like cooking, that they've done a million times.
Yeah.
Those two guys have it on lock. Then you have Trace and Frank, who are also very funny and definitely are skilled at it, but don't seem like they're as just like on a tactical level. They're just not as tight. They're not as sharp.
Well, they're also a little, they seem a little more low energy and not as spry.
Which is, I don't mean that in any way really as a criticism. It's just different. What Kevin and Bill, it feels like they're like a riffing machine.
Yeah.
You could literally put anything in front of them and they would do something fairly funny with it and you would laugh.
Yeah.
Whereas Trace and Frank were more like moment to moment. They had some amazingly funny things to say, but they just weren't as on it. And then you have all the folks that don't do riffing as a regular thing.
Yeah.
Like John Hodgman's hilarious.
Yeah.
And he had some really funny lines. But he also, like, I really noticed it when there was a few shorts where they didn't have any of the four that I talked about. It was just Hodgman, Varney, and the other guy.
Yeah.
And they clearly were in over their heads. Like, they didn't really know what to do.
Yeah, that's fair.
They're funny people, and they said some funny things. But it would be like you and me just trying to do it, like, off the cuff.
Right, right.
And it made me realize how hard it really is.
Oh, yeah.
You got to think of something super fast.
Well, the improv version is very hard. And so something that's kind of an existential crisis for me is that I have often liked, I like Mystery Science Theater and I will defend it to people. And if they start digging deep into the canon, they will, of course, learn that Mystery Science Theater started as an improv show before it transitioned to a scripted thing.
Right.
And I will often tell people, don't watch the early shows because, like, I think it's all of KTMA and then I think, like, a little bit of season one. Don't watch those shows because they improv. And the improv is not as good as the written stuff, and that's the only reason not to watch it. But this is kind of an existential crisis now because obviously all these years later, these guys are so much better at improvising than the original cast was in the KTMA days.
Like, yeah.
So much more skill has been acquired around this improvising riffing for films.
Right.
And it's made me aware that, like, I can't hide behind the excuse of, like, oh, the early seasons are improv, that's why you don't watch them. The real truth is that the skill level just wasn't there at the beginning.
Well, I guess it's like a lot of things, especially something like this that you're essentially inventing from scratch. There's not a lot to go off of, and the standards were probably much lower, and just, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't know what they didn't know.
Yeah.
they were pretty content to just put a movie up there and like say occasionally funny things. I mean, I don't think the audio quality was very good, right? There's a lot of stuff they just didn't really.
I guess my point is, I always kind of felt in the back of my head like Mystery Science Theater can't be good if it's improv. And last night totally shattered that.
Well, I do think it's way harder.
Yeah. But good, like in terms of quality, I thought last night was very high quality.
Yes.
And very funny.
Certain moments especially, but in general, yeah. I mean, I laughed like heck.
My actually least favorite of the nine was the final one that was like their callback. They did a bonus one and they brought all of them in at once, which I think was, how many riffers is that, seven? And it was just too much. It was too chaotic. They kept stumbling over each other. And I was like, okay, so there is something to be said for the core crew, like having two to three at a time and keep the rest of them away.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, I don't do improv movie riffing, but I've done a lot of improv, and that's true in regular improv too. Like you don't usually try to have all
scenes with nine, like people.
Seven people on stage. And if you do, because I have, you fall back on your camaraderie and training with those people. Yeah. So it's not just that those were seven people, but those are seven people that don't work together.
Yeah.
They're funny people and they like each other and they know each other, but they don't work together.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're sitting down in a line, which is not great because you are relying on things like body language to tell when somebody's about to speak.
Right.
And you can't even really see the people on the other end of the line.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not a great setup.
Yeah.
Having said that, certainly don't want to give the impression that this was not hilarious.
Oh, man, it was great.
It was just super funny.
It was a fine, fine hour.
Oh, man, I mean, I laughed so hard.
I think one of the things that also has improved is that they're just picking really good shorts to watch.
I don't know where they get these things, man.
They're so good.
I don't know where they get these things. We don't make content like this anymore.
No, no.
People don't make this stuff unless they're very explicitly trying to copy that old style.
So everything they watched was from probably, can we safely say, between the 50s to the 70s, right?
It seems correct.
I don't think there was anything more modern than that.
No, and probably not older either. It was a wide variety of topics, but weirdly all of them felt very similar in the way that they were like, they were educational, at least in theory, though part of the joke was that some of them didn't seem to be teaching.
What have we learned?
Yeah, it's like, what is this about? There's a few companies that are known for making these, of course. Centron is a big one. About half of them were from Centron.
Yeah.
Some of them were very odd. Some were a little more normal, but just about odd topics.
Yeah. I think these are the films basically that they would wheel the VCR or the film canister into the class on a Friday because the teacher had sort of gotten tired and didn't have a lesson plan.
God, I guess so.
I just want to fill time.
I think you're right, and yet it's also hard to imagine even in the 60s some of these. I mean, some of them are really trippy.
Yeah, really weird.
I think what we have to acknowledge is that just because that's what they were trying to do, that not all of them were very good. And some of them seem like they were not good even at their moderate stated goals of like teaching you something.
Yeah.
And then some of them were
just
nuts.
They fell into like these categories of movies that had clearly stated educational goals, like I would say the water safety one.
Right.
But really failed in sort of teaching the correct things. Like they literally showed kids doing things to hold their breath and stuff that I was like, I think this is a bad idea. Like I don't think kids should.
Well, also
this.
They were really focused on here's examples of what you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
Which is a tactic for teaching people things, but not the best one.
Right.
Like the office safety is another great example. Like here's all the ways you can die in an office.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one category.
So category two would be like movies that were clearly going hard on the idea that we are educating you on something, but it was like muddled and unclear what the sort of topic was. So I would say like, what was a good example? Like a world without numbers. Like I think the point was we need numbers.
Yeah. Math. Math is good.
But I'm like, you can't go a little harder on the theme than that. Like, and then there were, and then the third category was just complete time wasters, like the organ grinder one. Like, I don't know what the heck, yeah. what was even the high level purpose of that, except yeah. just to waste time.
Yeah. I like your categorization. For me, it's more of a spectrum, and the yeah. spectrum is moderately normal people doing moderately normal things on mm-hmm. one end, yeah. which I guess I would say maybe like, I don't know, office safety. I mean, it was odd, but it was still like, okay, I kind of get what's going on here. And yeah. then on the other end was like the straight up middle 60s. Like, how much acid were you on? And of course, the canonical example of that was when they turned all of the kids into giant ears and
oh
the
my
teacher
God.
Into a giant mouth.
Possibly our favorite one.
And all those moments were great because the riffers didn't even have to do anything. The audience would just have a collective gasp and yeah. just start laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the most obvious moment like that. But there were a few others. There was the frog postures in the Titan one.
Oh, yeah.
Where his little buddy
the
jumps on his back.
Video. Yeah.
And
very strange.
Very strange.
And like light comes out of his butt.
Yeah.
He like leans over and a sun yeah. emerges.
Or like the no talent for Tony mm-hmm. when there was the very beginning part in there in the Renaissance Fair for unknown reasons. Mm-hmm. And there's like a couple scenes of close ups. Like they would cut to an immediate close up of somebody in very odd facial
yeah.
makeup.
Yeah,
and you're like, this is so trippy. I yeah. don't know.
Was No Talent for Tony also the one with the marionette doll?
No, that was No More Numbers.
Okay, so there is a maybe I missed a category. I'm going to add a category 3.5. Category 3.5 is like sometimes the 50s and 60s and 70s were just. Like, not just odd, but actually, like, shadowy, dark, creepy in a very inadvertent way. Like you feel that you're watching something that was meant to be in earnest and very, like, just forthright and
yeah.
on the surface. Uh-huh. But there's just this insidious, like, maybe it's just the standards of the modern era, like our own, the way our brains are wired now, as we look back on this stuff and we're like, this is highly suspect and strange.
Yeah, well, so the whole mood for the night was set by the very first short, The Cautious Twins.
Cautious Twins.
And I remember there was a part where like the guy who admittedly is supposed to be creepy.
Yeah.
Right. And it'll be like a dude with a, and it's animated, but it's animated really poorly, like one frame every half a second, and it was a guy in like one of those big wide brimmed hats with a mustache, and he just kind of gently leans over and like lays his hand on the little girl.
Yeah.
And the whole room was like
we were like, we're watching pedophiles, like this is pedophile fan fiction. I don't know, like it would be very interesting to go back in time and be a person in the 60s and holistically evaluate this and ask myself, like, how creepy is this by the standards of today?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Because it's very creepy by 2026 standards.
It's very creepy now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you can't even show stuff like that. Even if you were trying to educate someone, you just wouldn't, you just can't do that.
Well, it has a little bit, and I'm absolutely not drawing a parallel here because I don't think there is one, and that's not what I'm trying to say. But it does have a reminder of, it reminds me of Reefer Madness.
Where oh, yeah.
there's a theory that they just wanted to make a movie about how awesome marijuana is, and mm-hmm. they hid that by having 2/3 of it be about how awesome marijuana is. And then they're like, but that's actually not awesome.
Right.
And look, all these
like
terrible
voiceover.
Things are going to happen to these people. And then, you know, the final third of the movie, all their lives go absolutely to shit
because
they smoke marijuana. But the first half of the movie, if that's all you watched, you could be like, oh, marijuana looks like a lot of fun, you know?
Yeah, there were a lot of moments in a lot of these films where the thing that they were obviously presenting as like, this is the bad thing, don't let this happen, was kind of like the wackiness and chaos of it was kind of more fun than like A World Without Numbers, when the numbers would disappear, you know, the chaos was kind of fun and hilarious. Like you kind of were like, yeah, I'd love to live a day like this kid. And the organ grinder one, I think the point was like, don't don't let your monkey out. Like, don't let your monkey escape. But when the monkey escapes, he has a terrific day and everybody loves him. And then he comes back.
I don't know what the point was of that one. That one stands out because it didn't have a clear educational message.
Yeah.
So let's go through them. There's water safety. Okay, don't drown. Are you listening? You should listen to people. A talent for Tony was like, you should think highly of yourself, I guess.
Yeah, and also I feel like the benefits of arts and crafts.
Maybe a little bit, but I think it was like a polemic, like a morality play
about how yourself.
You should believe in yourself.
Okay.
Maybe.
Right. Sure.
Hygiene for boys, like you should really take a shower.
Take lots of showers for like hours and hours of showers.
Cautious twins, you know, don't take candy from strangers.
Yep.
Mighty Titan, you should really exercise. A World Without Numbers, math is important. Office safety, you know, be safe in an office.
Yeah,
be so safe. So they all had at least some nominal, except maybe a talent for Tony and then and the organ grinder.
Yeah.
Like, you should be an organ grinder? Monkeys are cool? Yeah, that one fogs me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That one I don't get.
Well, and so I think that my categories also split down. I remember that Coronet Films...
Yeah.
Is also they've watched a lot of shorts in the MST and Riff Tracks era from these guys. So it's not surprising that we saw that logo. And those are the ones that had that were the most directly tied to education. So like the Organ Grinder one was not a Coronet film.
Yeah.
So I think that some of it was like who produced it, like, and some of these producers were just being weirder than others.
What was the super generic like films to teach you? It was ECI, Educational
Communications
Incorporated.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Which one was that?
Well, some of them, I think, were also, like, directly, like, done by the government. Like, the federal government was in some of the credits for a couple of these.
Okay.
Which makes me think that maybe it was tied to, like, you know, one of those kind of, like, presidential initiatives or, like, a first lady type thing, like... Hey, let's teach kids about exercise.
Two things that I noticed enough to like make a mental note of them. One is the interesting change in comedy when they're allowed to curse.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like some of them really liked the F word.
Oh, yeah.
Which is funny. Yeah. I mean, it was funny.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is Frank Conniff, man. Like that dude, like... He's different.
He comes around from behind. Like
he's built different.
He'll say less, and yet there's more punch. Like when he does say something, it's just so strange.
He's got this kind of like Frank Zappa, Robin Williams-y. Like honestly, I hope the guy's okay because there's a darkness in his soul, uh-huh. in a way that is not true of any of the others.
Yeah,
I mean Hodgman seems like a cheerful, upbeat dude. Kevin and Bill don't strike me as melancholy, but Frank feels like maybe when he passes from this earth, they'll find a bunch of writings.
Do you think that's what made him so good at his role on Mystery Science Theater?
Well, it gives him a depth and a sincerity that he can bring to the TV's Frank role.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would resonate if anybody else did that role.
Yeah.
Because when he's happy and cheerful, it's poignant.
Right, right.
Yeah. It's not just, you know, like Kevin Murphy's the opposite end. Like Kevin Murphy's just kind of an upbeat dude.
Yeah.
Like he's just kind of an optimistic, upbeat dude.
Yeah.
Frank Conniff is on the other end. He's just a, I mean, I'm not saying he's not capable of being happy or experiencing joy in his life, but he's a little goth.
He's very dry.
He's kind of got some goth.
Yeah. Doesn't smile a lot.
No.
Not a
smiler. He said some fairly dark things, actually. Yeah. I don't remember them, but I remember thinking after a few of his riffs, like, oh, man,
mm-hmm.
that's dark.
Yeah.
That's some dark.
Yeah.
That's some darkness, Mr. Conniff.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that.
So what was your favorite one?
Favorite short?
Yeah, I mean, adding together the short... Well, okay, I want you to pick two. Your favorite short, just as a thing, and then mm-hmm. your favorite short, including the riffs. They can be the same one, but...
They had more energy at the top of the show, so a lot of my favorite riffing was probably, like, one of the first couple. Like, maybe it was Cautious Twins, or... Maybe office safety. Office safety might have been my favorite just of the shorts because of the sheer amount of like violent comedy that I don't think was actually supposed to be funny. But like, how can you not laugh at these ridiculous pratfalls? I mean, the one where the woman ends up hanging off of a,
yeah,
like a bookshelf or something.
Yeah.
And then like she's suspended in air for a few seconds and they show her legs dangling and she's got like nylon, like 60s nylons on. So that's already a hilarious image. Like put that on an album cover. And then like in perfect comedy timing, like I realized it wasn't presented as comedy, but you get a few seconds of that and then the shelf falls over and she, I guess, presumably dies. I mean, how can you not love that?
That was the same one with the Yakety Sax guy running through the hallways.
Yeah, yeah.
Bowling over everybody.
At like 1.5 film speed for some reason.
To get to a plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was presented as though, I think this is long enough ago that you were supposed to believe that he was actually running that fast. Like you're not supposed to notice that the film is fast.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't know. Like I'm just saying people were pretty gullible in the 60s. So
is that both your favorite short and your favorite short if you include the riffing?
No, I think I did like, there was a lot of stuff. I like it when the shorts are at maximum creepy, I feel like it brings out these guys riffing. And you're right that when they're allowed to sexualize it more and swear more, they're even funnier. So there's a potent combination of the short is really inadvertently creepy, and then they're allowed to sort of go R-rated, which is why I think I really liked, I liked Cautious Twins a lot because it was very dark and depraved. And they just went for it, right? Like if that had been on Mystery Science Theater, the old show, they would have been restrained.
Right.
But they were unleashed about it. And it was great.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. Okay. So Cautious Twins in the office.
I think so. Office safety. Yeah.
I have to go, I don't know if it's my favorite. Maybe it's just nostalgia talking, but A World Without Numbers, like just tickled all my little bones because it's hard not to just compare it favorably to the thing about springs.
Oh yeah,
no springs.
Yeah, from Mystery Science Theater.
It had the same exact beats. You know, the guy or the kid in this one says, "Oh, numbers suck. I like A World Without Numbers."
Right,
and then it had the little creepy sidekick.
Yeah.
You know, in the springs it was Coily, and this time it was that marionette, which was super creepy.
Very, very weird.
And then the marionette's like, okay.
Yeah, right. And it was so, it was the same, it's the same, just with the springs thing, over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Like every time they showed anything with numbers, you're like, I get it. Like,
there was this, I don't remember the exact riff, but there was a part where the numbers go away like on the radio and the kid's voice but from off screen says something like, "Where did the numbers go?" And I don't know if it was Kevin or Bill is like, "The same place we put your parents."
Very dark.
I mean, it was dark.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So that's probably my favorite one if you include the riffing. I also, God, I don't know, man. A Talent for Tony is really whacked out. Like, why were they at the Renaissance Fair?
Yeah.
And I do like the ones with kids.
They're at the Renaissance Fair at the beginning and then they never go back to that.
Well, they kind of cut back and forth near the front of it, but then yeah, they never really go back.
That one, the thing about that one was that the emotional beats, again, I don't know if this is my modern bias, but like there are a couple of times when Tony is too sad.
Yeah.
Like there's this one time where he's crouching in a fetal position, and I think he's like in a bathroom or or maybe like the basement.
He's like
or
the
something.
Janitorial closet of
and
their house.
And it looks like a horror movie. Like if you froze frame that one frame of him in the fetal position, you'd be like, oh my God, like they're going to murder that kid.
Yeah. Well, and then that was almost immediately juxtaposed with him sitting on the back of what appeared to be an actual tamed lion.
Full-sized adult lion.
A full-size adult tamed lion.
Who we presumed had been tranquilized, but not so much that it was passed out. Just enough to be sort of sluggish and
I kind of don't think so. I think it's just was a tamed zoo.
Like a circus lion.
Like a circus lion. Yeah.
Chalk that up to another thing you do in the 60s.
No. So if I had to watch one of the shorts without the riffers, it'd probably be A Talent for Tony. But including the riffing, yeah, I'm going to have to go with A World Without Numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. These are all really good choices.
Yeah. But honorable mention to the Hygiene for Boys, parentheses, second edition.
Yeah.
Which implies that there was a first edition. Yeah. Work.
Like, what did they update? Like,
yeah.
And I want to give my honorable mention is water safety, simply because almost every tip they gave about swimming to children was like wrong. Like, I was in high school varsity swimming, and they were telling kids to like frequently bob up for like a microsecond and breathe like really fast and then dive down deep into the water. And they were showing a little girl doing that over and over again. I got to tell you, she looked really tired. And I was like, I think this is a bad idea. I think this is all wrong. Just wrong.
The very beginning of that movie, they kept making the Jim Henson jokes, which they didn't really get, like the Muppet Babies jokes. But anyway, the very beginning of water safety, the kid's like just walking through the grass, and then he comes on that extremely rickety bridge.
Oh, yeah. And right, I forgot.
I think Kevin's like, you got this.
This will be fine.
And then he immediately falls off of it in slow motion.
He falls off, and he actually tumbles like in somersaults in the air.
Yeah.
And lands in the water head first.
Yeah, on his head.
It looks really painful. Like, I'm like, that's an actual kid that did that.
Yeah.
This is not, you can't stunt double this shit.
Like, no.
Jesus.
Where did they find this stuff, man? Some of the film quality was really bad. I mean, like that Titan one, I remember the film quality was just really poor. It was all jumpy.
Yeah.
And then I think it was the numbers got really jank at the end. One of them just ended all of a sudden, clearly because the film had just gotten cut or wasn't good enough.
There was some frame skipping too, like lines would jump.
Yeah.
But I still think that they're picking shorts like way better than they ever have before. They really are thinking a lot, I think, critically about like what's going to be the funniest, especially live. Just really like knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with any of those as selections. There weren't any. I mean, maybe the Titan one, but again, I think that's because it was the riffers. It was like Janet and the guy, and they just weren't as good at it. But even that one had some funny moments, like the bizarre, you know, frog pose.
The sun coming out of the butt.
Yeah, the sun coming out of the butt.
Something.
And the onion dude. Yep. Nobody's going to know what we're talking about listening to the podcast. They're going to be like...
Well, it does make me wonder if you can find any of these online.
Yeah.
Either on the Riff Tracks website, I wonder, or if not, just on Google.
Yeah.
I actually wonder how much of this stuff is easily accessible.
Right.
Because how do they... Because you're saying, how do they find it, you know? I wonder that too. Like, are these easy to find? Is there a back catalog somewhere of like Coronet films?
Are they old enough now where they're in public domain?
Oh, almost certainly. I think that's actually one of the reasons why they like doing these so much.
Probably not though, because I mean the hard way, public domain, the hard way.
Oh, not you mean the 100 years rule or whatever? No, yeah. I imagine they're in public domain just because nobody copyrighted or claimed them. Like Coronet Films probably doesn't exist anymore, and it just didn't roll over to anybody.
Well, that doesn't mean it's in the public domain, though. Those are actually the hardest to get the rights to.
That's true.
Those are the ones they can't show.
I don't know.
They must have found some way. I bet they all got aggregated, and either that or...
Well, they can just ask for permission, too. It's possible people who own these just don't care and are like, yeah, have at it. Like, who would care about this stuff?
Well, sometimes it's hard to just even find the person.
Yeah.
Like anybody that actually has authority to say yes.
Like Bob Coronet Jr.
Well, and it's fine if you're just, I mean, I know SF Sketchfest is kind of in between. Like you clearly can't do that if you're a Shout Factory and you're trying to make a TV show.
Right.
But you can do it if you're just like me and you doing it for your friends.
Right.
Where what we did last night falls on that spectrum, I don't know.
Yeah, that's like, interesting.
Does Sketchfest make you dot all the I's and cross all the T's, or do they care?
Right.
Because last night wasn't being recorded. It's
no.
not going to be sold.
Right.
So maybe they just were like,
possibly.
Whatevs.
Yeah. That's certainly the low budget.
I mean, because you're right. Nobody in the real world, in actual fact, nobody could possibly care.
I don't think so.
But I know from my line of work that sometimes that's not enough.
Yeah.
You need like written permission.
That's true.
And stuff. Yeah. I wonder,
Well, I can tell you they, when you go on the Riff Tracks website, they often have a lot of free, and even Mystery Science Theater has done this actually on their Gizmoplex. They often have a bunch of extra free shorts, like a lot of them, which makes me think they must be easier to obtain full rights to. Like Riff Tracks, you know, the format of Riff Tracks is like, you don't actually, they don't sell you the movie. They just sell you the track that the riff, and you have to go find the movie.
Right.
But a lot of the shorts, they'll just give you the short.
Yeah, I imagine one possible reason for that is because ones that were made for the government are probably free.
Yeah.
Like, even if it was made by Centron, if it was made under a grant from the government, mm-hmm. then it's probably free.
Right.
But the ones that were just completely private, yeah, I don't know. And then I think about ones that were sponsored by companies like the Mr. B Natural thing with the instruments. Because they have a vested interest in as many people as possible seeing that. So they might have a license where like basically anyone can watch it anytime they want. Because it's basically an ad. It's essentially an advertisement for Cone instruments.
Yeah, and a couple times I thought maybe they were advertising something on these shorts, but I actually don't think they ever were.
Not directly, not that I could tell.
No.
You know what was kind of fun about it, and it didn't really click until now, but it reminds me in a good way of the old days at the Alamo Draft House.
Yeah.
When I used to live in Austin, like the good old days when they just would do like super random, just very underground comedy stuff involving film.
Yeah, this had an underground comedy film flavor to it.
Which I'm sure the Sketchfest guys would be very delighted if they heard us say that, because I think that's exactly what they're going for.
I mean, like, if anybody from Sketchfest ever heard this, all I can say is you guys are amazing.
And that place was full.
So great that you do this.
It was packed.
May they always be doing this every year.
I know, totally. I hope those guys made some money doing this for us.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Do you want to, like, is it, like, our tradition is that we rate it, like, an episode. Is it worth even doing that, or...
I don't know, man. I mean, I guess ceremonially.
Yeah.
I don't see how I could not give it a 10. I mean, you know, compared to watching a quality Mystery Science Theater pre-produced, but see, that's just such an unfair comparison.
Yeah,
you know, I always say, and I'll say it again, I will watch anything that's live if people have energy and enthusiasm for what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't even have to have been as funny as they were for me to still have a good time.
Right.
But they were. They were super funny.
They were super funny.
So yeah, 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
For me.
I would guess I would like maybe give it like a 9.5 just because I can conceive of a version that's funnier. Like I said, I think if they had not done the 9th short with all 7 of them, and like you said, a couple of the riffers, especially the ones that don't do this as a living, weren't as tight as the other ones. So like... 9.5, I guess, just because there's a 0.5 that they could have gone to.
But. Well, I'm not saying I give it a 10 because it was perfect. I mean, no, definitely. If you were actually Sketchfest and you were like, how do we make this better next year? Yeah, I have a lot
there's
of suggestions.
Ways to do it, yeah.
But I just mean like, it was also perfect.
Yeah.
It was just perfect.
Yeah. It was really good.
I'm often sad that, I mean, I'm not sad because it makes it easier to go, but sometimes I'm like, this thing should be sold out.
Yeah.
Months ago.
Yeah.
Like, why are you not all here?
Oh, no.
And, you know, some of our friends that we invite, because we went with like 6 friends, definitely were like, ha, 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 ha.
They all had very various levels of fun.
Right.
Some of them loved it. Yeah. A couple of them were like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah. Like, I don't really get this.
We had a guy go that literally didn't know what it was beforehand.
Yeah.
He just goes to stuff.
I still think he doesn't know what it is.
Yeah. He might not. He might not have ever heard of Mystery Science Theater.
And I get that it's not for everybody, but... Man, I don't know.
Yeah, I would say if you're listening to this podcast and you're a Mystery Science Theater fan and you've never seen them do it live in any combination, Riff Tracks or whatever it is, and they used to say this actually back in the day when Mystery Science Theater like first went on tour and stuff, like way back in the 90s, that there is an extra added something to seeing it live. It really is fantastic.
Well, and then you have 2 categories of live. You have the pre-prepared live.
Yeah.
And this, which is truly live, like improv live.
Right.
I also like the pre-prepared yeah, live.
Me
once.
Too. Me too.
We watched them do, was it like Watts? Something in Watts, like a fight in Watts years mm-hmm. ago.
Yeah.
I think under the cinematic Titanic.
We saw them do a live Mystery Science Theater episode in the era when they were doing Jonah episodes. They brought the live woman and then Joel was there.
Right. What did we see? What did they do?
It was some science fiction thing, I think. It was a full film, full sequence.
Right.
And that was great. They had the robots and they did like a little set.
Yeah.
And they had sketches.
Yeah.
It was, you know, janky and low budget.
Right.
And it was very different from what we saw last night. But all of it, like, I've probably seen Riff Tracks or some version of Mystery Science Theater 4 or 5 times now, and I've never had a bad time.
You mean live?
Yeah, live.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never had a bad time. All the live shows I've seen over the years, whatever format it was and whatever combination of the people,
yeah,
it was always good.
It'd be interesting. One of the things I explicitly didn't include in our random pile, and it hasn't come up yet, but I did include the Cinematic Titanic DVDs,
yeah.
But I didn't include the ones that are just DVD recordings of live performances. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should. I'm kind of tempted to put those back in the pile now. Just, I worry they're not going to be very good. But on the other hand, last night was really funny, so maybe they are really good. I don't know.
Yeah, I've watched some, like, I know I've watched some Riff Tracks live recordings. Like, I saw them watch Birdemic, and it was like, you know, a live recording.
Right.
And it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
I mean, partially I didn't include them because I got to draw the line somewhere and we already had like 250 episodes. But also, I don't know. I was worried the vibe would be different. But maybe I should throw them back in there. We haven't done any. I mean, for those watching at home, it is completely random, basically, our selections.
Yeah.
And we do have in the list things that are not, strictly speaking, Mystery Science Theater, but they haven't come up yet. Like, Film Crew and Cinematic Titanic and Riff Tracks.
Yeah.
We just haven't spun the wheel on any of those yet.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We'll get there. Okay, well, I guess we've been yapping long enough. Okay, so yeah, if you're on the fence and you're listening to this, go see them live.
God, go see them. Really, just do it. It's worth the cost.
They're super funny.
Yeah, go see it.
Okay, all right. Till next time.
Till next time.